then also just extend an apology from the minister. One of her staff members passed away this morning, so one of her communications people, so she is now with a bereaved family. So I'm sure, DJ, you will inform the family of our condolences in the time of the moment. Honourable members, that we have one item on the agenda, that is the briefing by the Department of Social Development on the skills analysis and job creation efforts in the social development sector. We have a sitting at 11 o'clock, so we need to be at least finished by 11:40. Can we keep to those timeframes? Thank you. So without wasting any more time, I'll give over to the Director General of the Department, Mr. Martin Sella, to take a quick presentation and also to speak to his team if he has with him today.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning to you and to all members of the committee. I wish to perhaps allow members of the social development team to introduce themselves, just in case that's the only thing they are able to say today. But I will start with my staff. My name is Vusi Matatsena, Director General of the Department.
Good morning. My name is Devin Chinnapin, the Acting Chief Director, Human Communication, Human Capital Management.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson and members. My name is Gigi Gosnell, the head of the DG's office in the Department of Social Development.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and members. My name is Sadi Luka, Chief Director, Community Development.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and members. I'm Maria Mavito, the DDG for Welfare Services.
Good morning, members. My name is Johnny Mediva, sitting in for the CFO.
My name is Miseletu Rosello. I'm the Chief Director of Legal Services.
Good morning. My name is Ngara Stefana. I'm with the Special Projects Office in the Government of Social Development.
Good morning. My name is Opa Ramachela. I'm with the Special Projects Office in the Department.
Good morning, Honorable Members. My name is Alice Odiambo. I'm a Senior Manager within SASA. Monitoring and evaluation.
Madam Chair, just next to the door, there's Ingrid Lovo, the PLO of the Department of Social Development. Thank you, Madam Chair, for inviting us. We have prepared a presentation which has already been circulated. And Mr. Chinnapin, who's our acting chief of Human Capital Management, is going to give the presentation, and the rest of the team will then field whatever questions the honourable members may pose. Thank you.
Honourable Chairperson, members, good morning. Thank you for the opportunity. This is my first appearance, and I'm so nervous that my hair is standing at its end. Nevertheless, I'll give it a shot. The presentation outline, I'll briefly go through the purpose, introduction, context, key functions, job creation initiatives, our skills analysis, the challenges, and probably a way forward. In terms of the purpose is to brief this committee on the job creation initiatives of the social development sector, as well as the related skills and competencies. As a way of introduction, poverty, unemployment, and equality continue to be a major challenge in the country. In order to address that, the State of the Nation Address declared 2011-12 as the year for job creation. Flowing from that, government developed 12 outcomes to give effect to its medium-term strategic framework. The Minister of Social Development is enjoined to respond to at least four of these outcomes. The first one being improved quality of basic education, which is outcome one. Outcome two, a long and healthy life for all South Africans. Outcome four, decent work through inclusive economic growth. Outcome seven, vibrant, equitable, and sustainable rural communities and food security for all. The initiatives of this sector need to be seen within a context, and the broader context would be the new growth path developed to drive the job creation initiative, and the new growth path identified five job drivers, and the public service is key in achieving the set target. We need to look at in the context as well that the public service is responsible for 20% of jobs created, and the private sector is expected to be the main source of job creation. Of the 20% which the public service is responsible for, health, education, staff and defense are the major contributors to public service job creation. Our job creation initiatives in the sector also need to take into account the minister's priorities, and there are four ministers, our minister has four priorities, which is the ECD, child and youth care, anti-substance abuse, and food for all. Over and above those priorities, there are a number of social development programs that the sector is responsible for, substance abuse prevention and rehabilitation, care and service for older persons, social crime prevention and support, person with disability, child care and protection services, victim empowerment, HIV and AIDS and TB, care and support services to families, youth development, sustainable livelihoods, institutional capacity building and support, population and development. In terms of the job creation initiatives, the initiatives that come out of the core programs would be the child and youth care workers through the ECBINDI model. It's a training of 10,000 child and youth care workers over a three-year period. It's the community care workers through the HCDC program, the Matupatsela program, and the social assistance program. In terms of the coordinated efforts, we have the EPWP and the community works program. And there are support service programs within the social sector which support the initiatives through the bursary program, internship program, as well as there are procurement initiatives in order to align to the job initiatives. With regard to the child and youth care workers, the aim is to expand its child and youth care services using a model known as the ICBINDI, Circle of Courage, to create safe and caring communities in the context of HIV and AIDS and TB. The child and youth care service to be delivered by appointing trained and qualified child and youth care workers who will provide direct support to children often and made vulnerable by HIV and AIDS. Up to 1.3 million children will benefit from direct supervision and psychosocial support services. The intention is to train 10,000 child and youth care workers over the MTS period. With regard to the community caregivers, the aim is to provide comprehensive and quality social services in the home and community to ensure that basic needs of people living with HIV and AIDS are met. To promote, restore, and maintain person's optimum level of comfort and social function. Trained community caregivers appointed by NPOs will render this service through the funds transfer from provincial departments. 14,590 caregivers are currently rendering this service. The intention is to increase the number of caregivers to 15,319 over the NTF period. With regard to the Matupatsela program, it is a value-based program targeting young people. It aims to encourage the youth to become pioneers and social activists to activists of change in their communities. Facilitates the creation of future good citizens who embrace good values and respect for their country. The general thrust is to promote activism, patriotism, and social cohesion amongst the youth. It contributes to skills development and improve the situation of youth by linking them to sustainable opportunities. 2,354 youth pioneers were trained to do house and community profiling. The intention is to train 9,975 youth pioneers over the MTF period. comprehensive social security. This is the fourth area of the core sector deliverables. It provides income support to over 15.2 million South Africans in poor households. 70% of the budget disbursed happens through payment contractors where thousands of jobs are created. The CSG, Child Support Grant, contributes to creating an environment conducive for child development. 99% of CSG beneficiaries attend school and will become ultimately employable. The micro-macroeconomic impact indicates that increased local activities and job-seeking behavior result from receiving this grant. With regard to our coordinated efforts, the social sector EPWP program, the DSC leads the coordination of the social sector EPWP program. The social sector program was launched in 2003-04 and is now in its second phase, 2009 to 2014. The social sector EPWP, as at the end of the 2011-12 financial year, delivered a total of 152,109 job opportunities against a target of 132,000. The sector has also benefited from the social sector incentive grant, through which 22 public bodies will be funded to the tune of 27.4 million in the 12-13 financial year. It is expected that 11,969 full-time equivalent work opportunities will be created through the social sector incentive grant funding program. In terms of the summary, a high-level summary of the job initiative, the Masupatela program 2012-13 will be 3,325, with a further 100 mentors. The intergenerational program would create 450. The Isibindi model, we're looking at 3,300 per year over the financial, over the MTF period. The community caregivers from 14,000 in 2012-13 to 19,000 in 13-14. CSG supervisors, 2,147 in 12-13, going up to 2,598, 2014-2015. SASA and the NDA would also be contributing in terms of their target from 8,954 for 2012-13 financial year to 9,175 and the NDA 127 over years. With regard to direct employment, which comes out of our personal, direct employment would be from 9,952 in the 2012-13 financial year to 11,311 in 2013-14. With regard to career paths, where does these programs lead to and these initiatives lead to? All of those categories, all of those programs would lead to those officials or those candidates or those recipients. They can be appointed to vacant posts of assistant community development practitioners, social auxiliary workers, data capturers, child and youth care workers, social workers, and community development practitioners. We have also prioritized these cadre of staff are prioritized for bursaries, which ultimately lead to social work and CDP qualifications and future employable and future employment. The social security allows for the completion of schooling and ultimately creates employability. That is a means to the end and not the end in itself in terms of social security. With regard to the current skills shortage, skill needs for almost all categories of staff exist. The expansion of the social development services and the introduction of new services for children, persons with disability, older persons, propels the demand for a range of occupational groups to implement development social welfare programs. Among the social service workers required are social work professionals, social auxiliary workers, child and youth care workers, community development practitioners, as well as the assistant and community caregivers. What we've done was to look at these skills, and we've done an analysis, and we summarized the skills gap. Now, this skills gap comes out of the workplace programs, the HWCTA analysis, and the other initiatives analysis through which these programs were introduced. What we found that in terms of the skills gap, in the generic skills, there's a gap with regards to management skills, financial and non-financial, computer skills, leadership, communication, project management, human resource, contract management, performance management, strategic planning, and the list goes until risk management. With regards to the skills gap in relation to occupational specific skills, the psychosocial support service skills, social work methods such as community family, child-headed households, and persons affected by social crime skills, the prevention and early intervention program skills, support writing, social work supervision, basic counseling, EPD program, the probation work, and child and youth care work, statutory intervention, youth development, project management, training on the legislative framework, and community development processes in Tunisia. These are the list of skills that we've highlighted as occupation specific, where the gap exists and what needs to be done. The other contributing factors to the job initiative, the job creation initiative, is our social work scholarship program, which ultimately leads to a social work qualification and employment in the public service. We're looking at, in the 2012 academic year, offering 1,781 bursaries. In the 2013 academic year, 1,668. And the 2014 academic year, to provide 1,206 scholarships. We also have the internship program, where departments appoint interns to offer them experience. We're looking at a total of 454 internships being offered by the social sector. And per province is broken down, Gauteng 254, Northwest 20, Limpopo 13, Mpumalanga 26, Free State 20, KwaZulu-Natal 52, Northern Cape 20, and the National Department 49. The learnerships implemented in the sector thus far, these are the learnerships that have already been implemented. In Gauteng, we've introduced the social auxiliary worker learnership, and it's at 582 youth. Northern Cape had the social auxiliary work and child and youth care learnership, and 35 youth benefited from it. Eastern Cape, social auxiliary work, 296. Mpumalanga, 400 social auxiliary work learnerships offered. In KwaZulu-Natal, 265 social auxiliary work learnerships offered. Free State, 38. Limpopo, 440. And Northwest, 863. We also have the job creation initiatives through the procurement program of the national and provincial departments. Procurement by departments and state agencies affects employment by the suppliers. Where imported goods are procured, the employment creation takes place outside of South Africa. Local procurement, in contrast, can stimulate employment in South Africa. And the new Treasury regulations on provincial procurement came into force in December 2011. They require local procurement in designated sectors and generally encourage the use of locally produced goods rather than imports. In many cases, increasing the share of locally produced goods and services in government procurement requires change in the procurement processes. Okay. To improve the procurement of locally produced goods and services, the national department, together with agencies and provincial departments, have to develop a strategy to procure goods and services. They need to develop a monitoring system where local procurement can be measured, identify what goods are imported and which are locally produced so as to find areas of opportunity for local production. We need to use the Department of Trade and Industry defined local produced goods and and services as a basis for procurement. We need to communicate their needs to potential local suppliers systematically so that the suppliers can develop capacity to meet requirements. We need to define the needs in ways that facilitate local production as far as possible. We need to enforce the reporting by suppliers on the number and types of employment created as a result of specific tender issues. With regard to the challenges in job creation initiatives, the enablers would be the appointment of data capturers required and the transversal data system needs to be developed. The stipend creates a challenge with regard to uniformity of amounts paid by provinces and different sectors, as well as the availability of the stipends, as well as the department's and sector's inability to absorb beneficiaries of the social work program. Procurement-related challenges. Suppliers are not registered on the supplier database of the department. Suppliers are not registered on the local system. The suppliers' physical address cannot be verified. Suppliers do not have valid tax clearance certificates and or BEE certificates. Local suppliers located in rural areas are difficult to contact. Their details are not easily known, and as a result, their details are not on the supplier base database. With regard to the way forward, we are proposing that the sector will finalize the development of an HR plan for the sector. We will finalize a development of the integrated sector service delivery model. And with regard to procurement matters, we will finalize the procurement strategy, identify commodities that will require per province on both key priorities or otherwise, and we will conduct joint workshops to potential suppliers together with agencies and provincial departments covering opportunities and compliance matters. Chairperson and honorable members, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Did you have anything to add? Thank you very much, Chair. I also want to thank the presenter for the very informative presentation. My interest is on page 9, community caregivers. We know that the health sector is also training community caregivers. And I just want to check the link between you and the health department in terms of the community caregivers. And at the end of this presentation, you're talking about what I was going to raise from the challenges, that there is no uniformity in most of these provinces, the way even the training of caregivers. And also the in uniformity in terms of the stipend. The stipend is not equal in terms of, you know, provinces. Some they give 1,000, some they give 1.5. And out of all the people that you spoke about, I'm not quite sure whether you have enough budget to do that, because yes, you have many vacancies that you are creating, but in terms of budget, how are you going to cope with all the people that are going to be employed? The last part, Chair, is I have many questions, but I'll wait for others to ask. The Assistant Community Development Practitioner, what is the difference between development workers. I'm talking about in the community now. Communities, they have development workers,
community health workers, there are caregivers, there are assistant community development practitioners in some cases in the same community. But also the Department of Health is also training this kind of targets to communities. They're targeting people that they call community health workers. And I'm sure in the communities, you wouldn't want to in one community, for instance in my constituency, you have people that are trained by community health workers in the same community and also trained by development workers, your social development. What is the link between you and the health department? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you so much for this presentation. My question is on page 18, in the internship. All the provinces are listed, but in the Eastern Cape and Western Cape, there is no figure in my document. How many in number? And then the second one is on page 22, challenges that the department is facing. The inability to absorb beneficiaries of scholarships. I would like the department to expand more, because I believe there are so many people there who are looking for this assistance of the scholarship and cannot access it from the department. So I don't understand why is the department not unable to. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. On page 4, you mentioned decent work. Can you define or unpack what decent work actually means, please? Because we hear that a lot about decent work, but no one seems to know exactly what it means. And then also on page 12, you talk about work opportunities, and later on you talk about full-time work opportunities. What's the distinction there, please? If you can explain that between the two. And if you could also just indicate which of the professions that you were talking about are full-time or full-time work opportunities as opposed to just work opportunities, you know, not full-time jobs. And then on page 24, you talked about updating or finalizing the HR plan. So what I get from this sentence is that there isn't one currently. So then the question arises, how were the needs determined in the department for all these additional workers if there isn't an HR plan? And if there is one, when was it last updated then? If you can just elaborate on that. And if there isn't an HR plan, how did you come to these figures of how many different categories of people you needed throughout the country, if there wasn't a plan? And then on page 18, and the Honourable Member raised it about internships, but if you remember in the budget debate when the Minister replied, she attacked the Western Cape for having internships and saying it goes against, I've got the transcript if you want it, PG, and it goes against the labour regulations, the labour laws. So I find it strange that in this document the Western Cape doesn't have any internships, but nearly every other province does. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the presentation. On slide number 4, okay, percent work it has been asked. And on slide number 5, where you say the minister's priorities include child and youth care, does your department ever have a bilateral with women, children and people with disabilities? That's one of the issues that affect the child. And then on page 8, you talk about child youth care workers. I'm not sure. It says you aim to expand. When is this going to start? When is the expansion going to start? And then on your last bullet, you talk about intending to train 10,000 child youth care workers over the MTF. We know that that's 3 years, but when are you starting? I mean, are you starting this year, next year, or the last year of the 3 years?
Thank you.
written here, and if so, is it possible that the department can share with us that research? And on the slide that doesn't have a number, where you talk about the social auxiliary workers that have been trained, something like that, is there any opportunities for these people to become, you know, social workers, the fully trained social workers, other than, you know, having to have new people into the system and unable to retain them? What I've seen in my experience is that if you take your assistants, people who've got experience and knowledge, who've been in the field, and give them that opportunity to upgrade themselves to become, you know, fully qualified social workers, not auxiliary workers, it works best in terms of retainment as a strategy. Your slide on procurement is actually, I don't understand, because we've been having procurement rules, regulations, blah, 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 for so long. How do you pay a company that is not even on your logistics system? For me, it doesn't make sense. How do they get the tender to do whatever they are doing? So if you can clarify a lot of bullets in your slide 23, because if they're not even they don't even have tax clearance, how do they get into the system of providing whatever service they provide to the department? The HR plan, yeah, it's very interesting actually that you have all the numbers before, but you haven't finalized the HR plan. How did you know that you will train in 90, 40, 50, whatever, in whatever province? Because my understanding is that you must have a plan first and then fulfill whatever you put on the plan. But if you haven't finalized it, for me, it's like working from back to forward. How did you achieve that? Maybe the new way of doing things? If you can just share it. I've got a lot of questions, but I didn't mark them nicely. If we've got a second round, I'll ask. Thank you.
We just have a bit of a deadline in terms of the 12 past going for half past 9. So we're doing quite nice. I'm sure you can have taken a second drive for 2 hours. Any other honourable members? The questions? Teacher, I think this is a very good presentation. If you go to page 7, your job initiation initiative, your child and youth care workers, 2,000 jobs over 3 years. I mean, it's a good model, it's obviously a very good model. And so I don't want to go there, but just the issue on social assistance program. Just to give more clarity on the social work issue. Are you trying to say that it's an enabler for job seeking and create security? So you can just give some more clarity to the committee on that. And that is the only question I have. And I think one of the members touched on it, I don't know whether it's on the member JTLTV or what, on the issue that the Western Cape doesn't have any internships in the Eastern Cape. Why? And your figures, does it since it's a sector report, can you just give clarity to members, because I think there is some confusion on the inclusivity of the sector. And that it's not just the social development department or social development initiative. So, because if that's the case, I'm sure you have any money, something that you have to report to Parliament.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. My colleagues here are going to assist me in filling most of the questions. But I thought I should start with perhaps one or two more emotive ones. During the budget debate, the Minister raised an issue about the use of internships. Perhaps I should clarify what the Minister was referring to. Internships are meant for people who do experiential training, people who have just qualified at university or college. And because they don't have work experience, they then get put through that. And there are salaries, in fact, the allowances, they're not called salaries, are determined by the Minister of Public Service and Administration. The allowances are less than salaries. Now, in the context of the shortage of social workers, we have been granted a special dispensation which allows social work graduates immediately to be engaged as social workers, not through any other program. In fact, the DPSA has gone so far as to allow us the opportunity not to even advertise those posts, but that we directly absorb social workers into full-time jobs as social workers. Now, the Western Cape, like some other provinces, have had some challenges in absorbing social work graduates who have been on the scholarship program. What the Western Cape has done, which is what the minister had issue with, was that instead of placing those newly graduated social workers into social work posts, they have in fact absorbed them as interns. In which case, it means they are not in fact members of staff of the department. They are interns, they are trainees, they are not being remunerated at the right level. And that's what the minister was having issue with. The use of internship to absorb newly graduated professionals into the place of work is certainly supported. And in fact, as you can see, all departments of government do it. So I thought I should clarify that, Madam Chair. The Minister is not opposed to internships, but of course she is opposed to them being used in the process of absorbing social workers who are graduated, who are needed to work as full-time social workers. I hope that clarifies that. But Madam Chair, let me give Mr. Tina Pan the opportunity to start by clarifying some of the questions of detail, especially the questions you've raised about the figures that we don't have in respect of certain provinces, especially the Western Cape and the Eastern Cape on internships, but broadly to explain what information is covered in this presentation. And then the other colleagues will then tackle other questions of detail. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Madam Chair, the information here covers the social sector, which would be the 9 provincial departments, the national department, to an extent the NDA, that to direct employment, as well as SASA. And SASA will talk the issue around social security. It was, as you said, the means to an end, but and how it contributes. I think there's a representative from SASA who would talk to that, the impact of the social grants on job creation. With regard to the internship, at the time of finalizing this presentation, we could not get the information from the Western Cape and the Eastern Cape, and we therefore had to proceed. It's not that they don't have or don't offer internships, because at the time of finalizing the presentation, we did not have that information available. If I can use this opportunity to respond to the issue of the HR plan and the security. With regard to the HR plan, there are HR plans in existence. It is a regulation, it is in terms of the public service regulation that you would have to have. The issue is that each department has their own HR plan. They are required to have their own HR plan, including SASA and the NDA. What we are proposing that we have a sector plan, which should be a consolidation of the social sector plan, which would make your tracking and your monitoring of your deliverables much easier, also allow planning. So this is not a thumbs up, and it was not just picked up this information. We've taken the plans of the provincial departments, the agencies, and we use that information. What we are saying is that a consolidated sector plan does not exist, and we should be looking in that direction. With regard to the skills gap, the skills gap, again, is regulatory that each department must have a workplace skills plan, must look at its skills and its competencies and its occupation, and determine the skills gap. And again, this is done per department. So the skills gap is determined through a process of developing your workplace skills plan, but it's done by each department. The HWCTA has also done its own research in terms of looking at the skills, does its own skills analysis, and we will be in a position to share that report in terms of the skills gap.
The question relating to procurement raised by the honourable member, just want to respond to that and provide clarity as to what we basically mean in terms of the challenges that we identified in the presentation. So the issue is that we haven't encountered those challenges. We haven't engaged suppliers that are basically facing those challenges. What is happening is that we as the sector, wanted to respond to the objective of government, as a whole, to ensure that we procure from suppliers, especially those that are are located in rural areas, when we procure goods and services. So the attempts to procure, we face those challenges. So that is why we indicated that also in the strategic planning document that we need to come up with a strategy to be able to workshop and train the suppliers to ensure that they comply to the requirements that they need to comply to, like, for instance, the tax clearance certificate, the BEE certificate, and so on and so forth. So it's not that we haven't engaged suppliers that are not complying in terms of the tax clearance and so on. Yeah.
Okay, so Chairperson, I just want to ask so are you saying the whole slide is on rural? That's why your challenge is
just mainly on
rural. Okay, I wish you would should have indicated.
Relevant to other departments, and those are referred then
health-related issues will then be dealt with by community healthcare workers as specialists within that particular area. And there's also another cadre of community development, which is a community development worker, who is actually under the auspices of local government. And their focus is actually on ensuring that government is closer to people. So they actually are a conduit of information from different departments to ensure that communities are able to access the services that they are not able to. So they actually are like information officers rather than doing technical community development work. And the community development practitioner also focuses on community organization and community management, which means that they've also got to establish or where the community development forums are in existence, strengthen those that are existing to ensure that communities are able to respond and also partner very effectively with government, as government as a whole is promoting active citizenry. I hope that is able to draw that distinction between the healthcare worker, the community development worker, and the assistant community development practitioner. All of them have got the same goal of developing communities, but they've got specific roles in that process. Thanks.
There was a question on the issue of decent work and the difference between work opportunities and full-time equivalents. Now, understanding in terms of decent work is that there is a prescribed by the International Labour Organization in terms of what decent work is. But in our context, our understanding is that it is a situation in which people have access to the basic conditions of employment as stated in the country, but also are protected within the applicable labor legislation. Now, when it comes to expanded public works program, we understand that it's a medium to long-term strategy that seeks to address the issue of unemployment. In the process, we create work opportunities, which in themselves are not necessarily decent work, but we understand that it's a continuum, part of a continuum to contribute towards a decent work. Now, what we start to do is to improve their working conditions and the conditional service to ensure that they have access to an improved stipend, they have are protected in terms of the minimum working hours. And in fact, there's a determination by the Minister of Labour on EPWP to say these are the minimum standards that we have to meet. Now, when it comes to work opportunities versus full-time equivalents, it is mainly an issue of headcount versus calculation. In terms of work opportunities, we're counting the number of people that have access to this opportunity, that have work on a daily basis on various projects. When it comes to full-time equivalent, it's a calculation of how many days you work per annum that can be converted into a full-time equivalent work opportunity, so that we say if this person has worked about 230 days per annum, that can be converted into what we call a full-time equivalent. So we're trying to see whether there is a way in which we can improve the situation so that they get benefits that are equivalent to what the working people are. But this is done within the budgetary constraints that we have within the program and the various departments.
There was a question. There was a question on the stipend. Yes, and the thank you much for that. And on the uniformity and the adequacy of budgets. The budgets are not adequate. Certainly. We have already referred to a dispensation in terms of the ministerial determination of labor that granted to public employment within government, which is public work. It does not cater the normal benefits that employees benefit from
like the Labor Employment Relations Act, basic conditions of employment. The framework that guides us regarding how to standardize it is the ministerial determination, which at this moment as we are speaking is supposed to be 65 rand per day, and it gets escalated every year in November according to the inflation rate. The budgets that are available for provinces through their equitable share baseline are not sufficient, as we know that the public employment EPWP intervention is of a recent introduction, but in our sector, the services are largely driven and delivered by community-based organizations. The communities and the provinces obviously have a challenge of how many can you absorb, to what extent can you spread the existing resources to the cater of workers that are in the system. The answer is it's not enough, and it is not something that can only be addressed within the modality of the public employment program. It is a policy issue. It's a matter which requires, obviously, looking into the resources that are allocated to the sector within the budget allocations that they have through equitable share, and what other financing mechanisms would be available. That's a matter that would be engaged, and it's underway, obviously, with the various authorities. We have made reference to the incentive grant. The incentive grant, we have tested it out also in the social sector. It has showed us results, but it is under review in terms of how best it can assist to address some of this, but it would call for more resources.
Madam Chair, thank you. Before my colleague from SASA comes in, let me just deal with some of the questions fairly quickly. Many of them would be linked to the question whether there is enough budget. We are all aware of the fact that we are operating under conditions of austerity. We are not different from any part of the world. So government resources are limited. So what we may consider ideal may not be affordable in the circumstances. And this impacts on some of the questions that have been raised. Honourable Member Mori asked a question about when do we intend implementing the program on child and youth care. We've been allocated 1.4 billion rands over the MCF, but that money only kicks in 2013-2014. So in the course of this year, as our minister stated in her budget speech, we are working with communities and the organization responsible for the training. We've started the processes of identifying people who are going to be trained. And the real training is going to commence in 2013-2014 financial year. And that is really the function of constraint, in that there is no allocation in this financial year for training, but that will only start next year. There was also a question raised about whether a social auxiliary worker could become a social worker. The answer is yes, anybody who wishes to study social work can, provided they have the entry requirements into university. But there is no direct link, meaning you don't necessarily become ready to become a social worker simply because you've done social auxiliary work. You would need to be admitted to university. And of course, we have the resources, limited resources, I should say, as part of our scholarship program. And this links me to the other question that's been posed by an honourable member for me. But I got the sense that she may have understood the point that was being made differently with regard to the challenge of absorbing social workers. At this students who have been on the scholarship program, who have now graduated from university, who are supposed to be absorbed by provinces, that provinces have been unable to absorb them into work, not into internships, into work. And that's where the big challenge is. And that has to do with the fact that across government, there's generally been budget cuts. But there are also other provinces where the financial situation is more severe, like Limpopo, and to some extent, a number of other provinces are facing serious constraints with regard to the absorption of graduate social workers into full-time jobs. Madam Chair, if we could just give our colleague from SASA the opportunity to speak to the social assistance program.
There was clarity seeking on the extent to which the social assistance program is an enabler to job seeking opportunities. And I just wanted to maybe add over and above what has already been indicated, that evidence from the child support grant study that was finalized in 2012 has indicated that access to social assistance actually encourages the beneficiaries to indulge in economic activities through job seeking. And also, over and above this, it also encourages the beneficiaries to attend school, which has a ripple effect of eventually putting them on the job market and also encouraging them to seek for job opportunities. It actually found that the adolescents that are accessing the social assistance program have better educational outcomes as opposed to the ones who are not accessing the social assistance program. And this eventually has a ripple effect or an implication on the job opportunities in the future. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Bibek. Thank you. So I think Didi has covered more than the questions that were in. Yeah, except that except there was a question in relation to our relationship with the Department of Women, Children with Disabilities, that whether we do have bilateral, because we do have on a regular basis, we work very closely with them. But we should bear in mind that the Department of the Ministry of Women, Children with Disabilities, their main purpose is monitoring and social development purpose is directed to everybody, but we do work together. They make sure that the rights of children is enshrined in our constitution advised by our program. And if we seem to be away from that, or we seem to be making the advancement. And they work with all the departments. There's a council, and we're also part of the task force of the many of many committees or many other forums that we think we can support the rights of children.
I'm going to allow you the maximum of 2 questions each.
The Masufa Taylor, you are saying it's somewhere in this presentation that you're saying 10,000. Or you're going to train 10,000. I'm not quite sure if your intention to train 10,000 child youth care workers over MTS. That's a different, it's not the same. But also, the child and youth care workers, it's 10,000 that you're going to train over 3 years. Am I right? Did you? I just want to check whether this 10,000 is coming from all provinces. And then, again, it's always my interest when you speak of Masupati, which ages are you talking about? If you say Masupati training, are we talking about from 4 or 6 to what is the age limit? The intention
people to bring the child and youth care workers over? You did talk about the, what they are going to do, teaching. But intentions my intention is to check what is their job description? What are they going to do? Are you saying yes? Thank you.
Okay. Thanks. Okay, Honorable Mora.
Thanks, Chairperson. On slide 5, the third slide, I just want to find out, does it mean private sector is expected to produce 80%? And if so, what would be this department's, I don't know whether to say role or support or, you know, in terms of not ensuring, but because we've got so many policies that are sort of anti-private sector, as this is privatization, and at the same time we have the idea that it must, you know, it's expected actually to provide 80%, you know, of job opportunities. So I just want to, you know, to have an idea of what is the department's view, maybe, let me put it that way, in terms of how do they think private sector can do this when we have, you know, on the other side, this issue of privatization, capitalism, you know, all of those. You can always not answer it if you're not comfortable, but it's just to, you know, to share, to see how far, you know, are we together in terms of just overall thinking. And then, Gigi, you didn't understand me when I was talking about the auxiliary social workers. I'm a radiographer by profession. At some stage, we had what we call supplemental radiographers, which are assistant radiographers. And we created opportunities where we say, irrespective of an A in math, B in science, or whatever, we had a criteria where we said experiential, somebody with experience, to say we give them. Because you will find that most of your, I'll talk to nursing especially, you would have enrolled nurses who are very old. So who qualified 20 years ago, but they've got good basic skills in terms of nursing. So I'm talking about such people today. Are there opportunities, you know, for them to further train to become social workers? Not that, yes, I understand they have to apply, but is that, you know, is there that flexibility to allow them? Because some of them, we find that they wouldn't qualify to go directly, you know, into social work, full-time, four-year degree or diploma, whatever. But they would qualify to become auxiliaries. But with experience and all that, that's what I was trying to say. Not that to go directly or a process that somebody must become an auxiliary first. And then with the MTF, I'm worried because if you say the money kicks in 2013, how long is the training then? Or it kicks in January, the training is for the whole year. Just clarity on that. On the 10,000 child care. And thank you, Chair.
Just on the child support grant, and as was said by SASA, it enables children to stay in school a lot longer and to seek job opportunities. But I think what, you know, the National Development Plan indicated, that maybe we should engage the Department of Education on it in particular, is the quality of basic education in this country and the fact that it's been meltdown in some provinces. So while we are keeping kids in school, and that's great, don't get me wrong, the fact is you also have to look at the quality of education. And then thereafter, once they have left school, job opportunities. We have nearly 8 million unemployed in the country. So everyone, you know, starts queuing up for jobs. So these are, so while we're playing our part, and the fact is other departments aren't, that's for sure. That's just a statement. And then on just on the stipends, the gentleman mentioned that it's supposed to be 65 rand a day. And I take it from the comments were made that most provinces or all provinces are not paying the 65 rand per day due to budgetary constraints. Now, and I understand that, and we could have a debate about whether or not, you know, the labour regulations need to be more flexible and should people be able to work for less money and less benefits in order to reduce the 8 million that are unemployed. But in the documents, and Honourable Moray has mentioned it, you talk about the
thank you, Chairperson, and let me join my colleagues to welcome the presentation. Mine is just to ask if there was something that shows us how the provinces are paying stipends so that we could see the difference. I think that will be easy for us. And the other thing I just wanted to ask the DG and the department that if that flexibility is going to happen, wouldn't it be better for the provinces first to absorb those people as permanent jobs so that they create space for the people who are coming so that they can go and train again? I think that would be the best way, and I will definitely ask honorable members as we are sitting here to go back to our provinces to ask our department in provinces to absorb people as permanent, the social workers for permanent jobs so that space should be created for the incoming ones. Thank you.
I'm just going to allow one question per member because our time is quite tight. Honourable Member Kenya, Gaba, and then Twitter and Kosha. That's it.
Hello, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation. I think I'm going to combine this question to make it one. On slide 11, slide 22, bullet 2 on slide 11 is the last bullet on page 22. The issue of creating an environment conducive for child development beneficiaries to attend school and become admittedly employable. And who agrees to absorb beneficiaries of scholarships? My question is that have you got any outreach strategy to see that, and we always say that we don't want them to be dependent. These beneficiaries, how are you going to look for them, especially in the rural areas? What strategies have you got to have an outreach program to them also to be able to absorb and the beneficiaries on soil? That's the last one, as I can make it small. Current skills strategy. There's a paragraph, the last bullet paragraph. I can see that again on combined with benefits implemented in the sector. There are figures here. And here we are talking about current skills strategies. On this bullet, which starts with among social service workers required. Looking at these figures in the scheme of the benefit implemented in the sector, what target have you got? Have you got a target? Because you are saying here that the strategies of scheme, and at the same time, I can see here we can see some of the provinces are big numbers like Gauteng and Mpumalanga and also Limpopo. So, therefore, have you got a specific target? Like we say now, that we can say now, is the scheme strategy. Then, if I understand in some because of their school is broken, there's no
please, man, can they be helping these departments that they are making us to be a manner in our, in the world, we are a manner about what we have to check, going to check.
Comrade Bosha raised that in some provinces, in terms of the stipend, there are provinces, I don't know whether it's Department of Health or Department of Social Services. As I said, what is the collaboration between me and Department of Health? But I know that there are areas where we went to do oversight in the Eastern Cape. I want to make an example of that. That the way Comrade Bosha that they didn't have a training where you ask them and offer the stipend. So there are areas where you find people that are they organize themselves to become conductors or caregivers. Whether the social development considered those that are already there to strengthen those and give them training rather than taking new people altogether. Because we have NGOs that are already there, that needs help. That's point number one. Point number two is that on page 9, we're talking about trained caregivers appointed by NGOs to render this service. And there are funds that are transferred from provincial departments to NGOs. I think it should be wise for us as the members of this committee to know those non-profit organizations that are given money by provincial departments. Because in some cases, maybe those NGOs are in our constituency, and we do not know that they are given money by social development in order to do oversight. Because if they are given money by Department of Social Development, we need to do oversight on them. And also, DG, I think it's going to be wise again to know the amount given to those NGOs by social development so that we are able to monitor, those non-profit organizations that are given money. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members. I'll now go over to the profit fund, and in terms of timekeeping, it's now 14 minutes past 10. Can you be done with your response by 18 minutes?
Thank you, Madam Chair. We'll try. 10,000 child and youth care workers, are they in all provinces?
Yes.
What is the role of child and youth care workers that are being trained, or that are going to be trained under the disability model? They provide care and support to orphaned and vulnerable children. They provide direct services to children in the home. They bathe them in the morning, prepare them to go to school, they cook for them, they help them with schoolwork. When they come back from school, they take them to safe parks, they get them engaged, entertained, they assist them with schoolwork. Basically, they give them the experience of life that would count in the presence of a parent who is otherwise not there. Madam, Linka will deal with the much particular question and the issues relating to the age limits. Private sector must contribute 80% of jobs, yes. But this is a loaded ideological question. Is there private sector in this country? Yes. Do the macroeconomic policies of this country allow private sector? Yes. Thus, the private sector have a role to play in creating jobs, yes. Government is contributing 20%. Indeed, the private sector must contribute the remainder of the percentage. And that is the expectation. I don't want to be caught up in the ideological debate about capitalism and so on. The fact of the matter is that, yes, government has created a number of initiatives where, in fact, even enterprise development, companies are seen to be a policy stance that says companies can operate. But in return for the space, the opportunities that have been created, what is it that companies must do for society? We're saying they must create work. We're not saying they must simply give people money. They must create work opportunities. They must give people space to come and sell their skills, their labor, in return for which they'll be paid. That's where I will stop on that front. Let me allow some of my colleagues to field some of the questions quickly, including Ms. Tomachana.
Thanks, Chair. With regard to the age cohort for Masupatela youth, at the moment the focus is on out of school youth, which is between 18 and 35. But the ideal was actually to start this program in the future at a foundation level. But because of the budgetary constraints, the focus is on the out-of-school youth. But with the value-based program, the intention is actually to catch them young and instill those values. But the current focus is between 18 and 35 and focusing mainly on out-of-school youth.
Thank you very much.
The duration of the training for child and care workers. This is for 2 years, but it's experiential learning. So it will stretch throughout the three years. As the new one comes, the others continue with the training. So it's mainly experiential. It's not a classroom training. Part of it will be classroom based, but almost 80% will be on the site training. There was also a question with regard to the social work, social auxiliary workers. Why can't they be, social workers? I think the aspiration of each social auxiliary worker is to become a social worker. But they have to meet the requirement like the DGSS, but we do take into consideration experience and prior learning. The requirement to enter into this is a matric exemption, but you know after some years that can be waived, and then the person can now get into the social work program at the university. It is doable. There are a number of social auxiliary workers who are training as social workers now, and also on the community program where they qualify.
So I think the question was also on people having life experience that wants to be social auxiliary workers. In terms of that program on leadership, you also absorb people that want to come on leadership in terms of social auxiliary workers that maybe don't have the academic qualifications but have the life experience.
I think as the question came through the comment, it does happen that there are people with experience, especially at community level, who qualify to be on the leadership for social auxiliary work.
With regards to whether the private sector should also be permitted to have flexibility to pay people according to the ministerial determination, I will not repeat what the DG has answered on. Suffice to say that the ministerial determination that we referred to earlier, promulgated by the Minister of Labour, that permits us or public employment programs to pay at this level and rate, is a negotiated instrument with organized partners within the government institutions of our country, in this case, the network, where organized labor, community, business, and government have negotiated that in the light of the challenge that we face of unemployment and poverty, both inherited and today, there should be this dispensation. it is applicable only in the public sector, and there is reason for that. One, very clearly, we recognize that DG has indicated earlier on. The public sector doesn't strive to replace the private sector. The challenge we face is a mammoth task that requires all the partners in society, and hence the platforms like NECLEC, so it fit to negotiate this outcome. But also most importantly, public employment, or those who are employed on this mechanism, are not meant to substitute those in the labor market. They are not meant to displace those in the labor market. And it does not remove the onus and the responsibility on the economy and society to ensure that people do have means of livelihood. Lastly, 2 points. Public employment are a last resort. We recognize that in the light of the nature of the unemployment in the country, the public sector also has a role to contribute to that employment, in addition to the policies and legislations that are made by yourself. We recognize that the nature of unemployment is structural. I don't know the wisdom of saying this last part that I must say, but I am nonetheless going to say the public sector does not distribute profits or returns like the private sector, because the private sector is privately owned. So it is not that anybody benefits in terms of the state, in terms of the resources that are being allocated. They are guided by the fiscal and as agreed with the partners and yourself as the legislature. I do not see why, if I have a private business, it's my company, and the profits are the one that I have to distribute, then I should be allowed to pay people at that rate. This is not applicable. We are talking of different, two different entities, two different environments. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, please.
Yes, Madam Chair. Honourable Member Klaber's concern, we will certainly engage with the Department of Health to see in what way we can ameliorate that situation. Honourable Member Chweta, we will make available to yourselves as the committee information with regard to which NGOs, community-based, NGOs that have been funded by us, how much they are being funded with and what, for what purpose, so that in the course of your oversight visits, you are able to interact with these organizations for that purpose. That will also assist us. If they also know that members of parliament will come here and examine exactly what it is they do, over and above the report they give us, so that you will be there to interact with them. So that we will certainly do. We are conscious of the fact that there are caregivers that are not as yet part of the expanded public works program, where people are undergoing training in the course of which they are receiving stipends. But the effort is always to reach out to them. So for as long as there are people who are doing this work, we make every effort to make sure that these people are brought into the loop, but we rely on provincial departments reaching out to these people. People who are already doing the work are in fact the ones we are looking for, so that we can then count them as people who are now on a training program to make sure that the services they render are also enhanced through the new skills that they will acquire, but also that in recognition of the contribution that has been made by these people, that they are being afforded some stipends. We can also make available information with regard to what stipend is being paid by which province, so that even in your engagement during the visit, you can help us make sure that there is that standardization So by and large, we rely on reports that provinces send us. We don't always have the capacity to go on the ground and hear it from people that indeed they are receiving the stipends that we have been told they are receiving. Yes, Madam Chair, I think those are the questions that haven't been dealt with. Indeed, Madam Chair. Whilst we encourage the establishment of new organizations in areas where there is no NPO, we're always happy to work with NPOs that are already in existence. And then based on the needs they have and the services they render, we then engage with them for purposes of funding. Certainly that is part of our ongoing program. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Is ongoing. Since even in our engagement with the NGA, and that's what they're watching, that we like to send this sub-program to social development budget. Honourable Members, thank you very much for that. We thank you, DG, for promising to provide us a certain report, especially around the uniformity of funding the NGA. Honourable Members, on that note, thank you very much for coming.